to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're continuing our conversations with smart people who are in the hall here at the Conservative Political Action Conference, one of whom is John Sitalides. We have spoken with him in the past about things involving Greece, and this seemed to be a perfect moment to do that because our so-called NATO ally, Turkey, is making noises, and I'm sorry to say it seems to be not just out of Recep Tayyip Erdogan's mouth, but that of his opposition as well, that the Turks are determined to invade another NATO ally's sovereign territory to seize some 18 islands that have long been in Greek hands. John is a man who has considerable expertise in these matters. We are delighted to welcome him from Trilogy Advisors, LLC. And tell us what we should make of these threats from the Turks. Are they serious, credible, and worrying?
They're very serious, they're very credible, and they're very disturbing. Frank, you'll recall that in 1996, Greece and Turkey almost went to war over these same islands. And it was a Clinton administration policy to try to deconflict and succeeding to do so when the European Union largely slept literally in the middle of the night. It was a 3 o'clock a.m. deconfliction agreement that was negotiated by the United States with Turkey and Greece. But these are two countries that see very, very differently the sovereignty of islands in the Aegean Sea. They're Greek. The U.S. and NATO has recognized them as Greek since 1947 when they were ceded by the Italians. And Turkey has resented that decision for the last half century or more. But they've largely been at peace with it. But this is a very disturbing trend right now that we see with Erdogan increasingly asserting Turkish power and Turkish ambition and Turkish revanchism in Syria, in the Middle East, in Cyprus for the last 40 years, and unfortunately again now in the Aegean. And there doesn't seem to be any party, either in Europe or unfortunately right now in the United States, that's looking to decisively state what is correct and what is not.
This is of a piece, of course, with the larger problem of American policy towards Turkey, this possibility of actual hostilities between two of our allies in the region is unfortunately just one of many examples now in which I believe the Turks are demonstrating that they are by no measure reliable ally, NATO or otherwise, to the United States. And I just wonder, as you're looking at this, John, if you were sitting opposite Donald Trump, for example, what would your recommendation be to him that America do now about the Turks? We've had Secretary of State Rex Tillerson over there in Ankara recently, and it seemed as though there was nary a discouraging word to Erdogan. What would your advice be under these circumstances?
I think the most difficult aspect of this issue, Frank, is that there may not be a response from the U.S. that reconciles our interests with those of Turkey. They may simply be irreconcilable in Syria right now. And I don't see how, from a strategic perspective, the United States abandons the Syrian Kurds, not only who are the best fighting force on land versus Islamic State, but also because the Kurds have been seeking independence for the last 100 years in Rojava in northeastern Syria. They've earned the right to govern themselves autonomously. And I don't know that anyone wants to see Bashar Assad come back to that part of Syria while he's negotiating with Iran and Russia on how to secure his own hold on power in Damascus in the western part of the country. But the United States needs to stand up for the Syrian Kurds. They're probably our best military ally in the Middle East right now. And as long as the
with
Turks...
the notable exception of Israel,
I'm leaving the Israelis out of this equation right now, talking literally about the Syrian battlefield. But thank you for that correction. But the Turks, as long as they see the Syrian Kurds as hand in glove with the PKK, that really has been a Marxist-Leninist organization seeking to separate southeastern Turkey from the rest of the republic, those two perspectives of the U.S. and Turkey are simply not reconcilable.
You know, John, we have a lot of issues, as I say, with the Turks. One that I've just learned of that I wanted to get your read on is that the demographic situation in Turkey is such that in the not-too-distant future, the Turks understand, and some say it may be right now, in fact, that the relative rates at which the ethnic Turks are reproducing versus the Kurds are reproducing is going to give rise to a situation where half the country is not Turkish, which will presumably only feed into this desire for a Kurdish state that is separate from Turkey. It has the potential, it seems to me, of inspiring the kind of response that the Turks have engaged in from time to time against Armenians, against other Christians, including Turkish Christians, namely genocide against the Kurds. Is that something that we should be anticipating? And again, it simply reinforces the sense that there's a serious problem here. But what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know to what extent we can bank on a post-Erdogan policy that will be more conciliatory towards the Kurds inside of Turkey. Again, remember that Erdogan for a while was not only conciliatory towards his own Kurdish citizens, but towards neighbors. They had a zero policy, zero problems with neighbors policy. Erdogan has taken a very disturbing turn for the worse over the last half decade, and I don't know to what extent it's a dissatisfaction with American policy or a lack of American leadership in the Syria situation, the Syrian civil war, and in Iraq, whether or not
it's a vacuum that he's filling, in other words.
He's filling, and he sees that Russia now is the, to paraphrase Osama bin Laden, the strong horse in the Middle East, and the Iranians as well, and looking to jockey to make sure that Turkey's interests are advanced as best as possible.
Including, it seems, a new caliphate, if he can pull it off. Let me turn quickly to another topic. You've written recently in the Washington Times about maritime choke points. This is a particular passion of mine, and we were speaking in the earlier segment with Gordon Chang about China's expansionism, and of course, I think it's fair to say that they seem to be very intent on dominating quite a number of those choke points, not just in East Asia, but around the world. Talk about their role and more broadly the importance of these choke points to our security as well as economic interests.
It's one of the most critical issues in foreign policy and national security, and unfortunately one of the least reported. So the American people tend to not be quite knowledgeable about these issues. The South China Sea is perhaps the single most important waterway in the world. One third of the world's commerce traverses this sea annually. And not just in terms of natural resources, consumer products, but also energy deliveries. The Chinese are absolutely determined for historical and I believe for now geopolitical reasons to reclaim what they feel is their historical right to the South China Sea, even though they're at odds with about eight other significant Southeast Asian countries that all have territorial claims to the South China Sea. One, this is historical. China sees itself as the country that all neighbors should be paying tribute to, as they did thousands of years ago. But I think going forward, more seriously, and again geostrategically, this is the first phase of pushing the United States out of the Pacific area, off the Asian mainland. The Chinese are determined to manage Asia's commerce in the 21st century and push the United States out of the South China Sea, out of the East China Sea, where South Korea and Japan are dependent on the U.S. defense umbrella, and then eventually through the Straits of Malacca back towards the Indian Ocean. There was a prominent Chinese official about a year ago who stated that the Indian Ocean may be called Indian, but it's not India's. And that's where I think we'll be seeing great superpower competition as India continues to emerge in the years and decades ahead. The Indians are not going to allow the Chinese to control the Indian Ocean or the critical shipping routes to the Persian Gulf, Suez Canal, and eventually to European markets. Yeah.
Much as we have allowed them to control shipping routes through, say, the Panama Canal and maybe the Azores coming up, as well as the Caribbean. John Sitalides, thank you so much for today. This is a bracing series of topics, and we look forward to continuing our conversation with you in the near future.
Thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure to be with you. Thank you, Frank.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.